It's a great pleasure to be here. I would like to thank you for your hospitality. What I'm going to talk about today is recent development on molecular simulations of radiobiological effects. In particular, I'm going to talk about the DNA damage by ionizing radiation. This work was partially done in Texas and in Canada, NRC, and also University of Ottawa. In this work, I had several collaborators, including people from Department of Radiation Oncology from University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center, which is one of the campuses of University of Texas in Dallas. I had opportunity to work with physicians, with radiobiologists, and I learned a lot of things about radiation by talking to these people. I also have some collaborators on the computational part. One of them is Adrie Van Duyn from Penn State. He was one of the developer of the program REACT Force Field, which I'm going to talk about. This program was under development for 10 years in Caltech. Another colleague from NIH recently moved to Mississippi, and on this work we had some works based on QMMM type of approaches based on Gromax CPMD, and also working with Thomas Sprovitz from University of Ottawa. He is the chair of photonics, and we have done some studies based on for writing proposals for protection of a DNA from the damage. Here, this is the outline of what I'm going to talk about today. I start with a quick review on current computational methods for radiation interaction with matter, in particular with the atoms. We know that the atoms are in the scale of angstrom, so I roughly put an order of 0.1 nanometer to describe the size of a typical atom. And the typical computational platform for this event, which has been established for many years, is Monte Carlo simulation based on empirical atomic scattering cross sections. There are lots of programs on this, including MCNPX, developed in Los Alamos. This method used as an accurate dosimetry and vastly used by medical physicists for the plan, for the treatment plan in radiation oncology, in radiation therapy. There are some other studies in based on cell damage or repair mechanisms, and the typical size length scale for such events and the computational methods is coarse strain reaction diffusion models. And for these models, we are dealing with the DNA damage in the nucleus of a cell, and the size of a cell is 1 micron. So we have, from one side, we have studies for atomic scales. We have some studies for scale size of the or dimension of cells. And what I'm going to try to fill a gap between these two length scales. So I'm going to talk about our recent progress on computational or mathematical models for the DNA damage. We start when we talk about the DNA, we have some individual atoms, so there are some events at the scale of the atoms, and the size, the larger scale of the DNA in a chromosome goes to the typical dimension of a nucleus in a cell. So what I'm going to talk about to cover this range of length scales. I'm going to focus on initial DNA damage, propagation of damage, and chemical pathways if we have DNA single-strand break, if we have DNA double-strand breaks, if we have a base damage. And finally, I'm going to show you the effect of the environment, which plays a very crucial role for this particular problem. We came with some proposals, and I'm going to talk about these proposals, and one of them is some mechanisms in controlling the initial damage through possible quantum manipulation by optical or chemical means. Also, we have a proposal to develop a computational platform for radiobiological effects. Obviously, it is at the molecular level, and it's a combination of Monte Carlo and molecular dynamics. So we need to develop a stochastic model for ion track structure and combine it with molecular dynamics, which I'm going to show you. And the use of the immediate use of such a platform, if it's going to be available, is to study the events, which is limited to low dose. This is a limit where the experimental data is not easily accessible. And developing such a computational platform can be a great help for understanding low-dose events. Okay, but before that, let me introduce some fundamental concepts, such as the radiation itself. We know that the radiation is a propagation of energy in form of waves or particles, such as X-ray, neutron, proton, electron, or even ions, such as carbon, iron, etc. We know that the radiation interacts with matter, in particular with the biological systems, and it causes damage. The damage is an accumulative character of the radiation. So a natural unit for such a character has been defined as gray. So 1 gray has been defined as 1 joule of energy deposited by the radiation into 1 kilogram of matter. The other character of the radiation is the energy. When we talk about radiation in some medical schools, we can divide radiation into 2 categories. Diagnostic radiation, which is something between 10 and 100 kilo-electron volts, and therapeutic radiation, which is in the range of much higher energy. For the X-ray, the typical energy is between 1 to 20 mega-electron volts. When radiation interacts with the matter, it deposits energy. The mechanism of the deposition is the decay and the scattering. So the energy decays in a cascade of radiation from high energy and it ends to the low energy events. And we can make some examples, such as the nuclear disintegration. If the radiation is has a very high energy, such as above 30 mega electron volt, then one of the events that may happen is disintegration of a nucleus. So when we send a radiation to somebody, there is a nuclear reaction inside the body. The other event which happened is electron-positron pair production. And it is the dominant effect if the energy of the radiation is within 1.2 mega electron volt, which is the energy needed for electron and positron to be created. The other effect is Compton scattering, where the radiation goes inside the atom, and then it interacts with one of these electrons. Then the radiation goes with the lower energy, it scatters to another angle, and there is ejection of electron in different angles. And this is one of the dominant scattering mechanisms if you are within mega electron volt. And we have photoelectric effect for the range of clear electron volt, and that's a dominant effect when we go to a diagnostic radiation, such as CT scan. And finally, when the radiation decays to a very low energy, such as electron volt, then there are some scattering mechanisms, such as coherent scattering. Now, if I want to make a summary, I can put it in such a diagram, talking about the relative importance of the radiation. Here in this diagram, in one axis, I have the Z of absorber, which is the atomic number of the substance under radiation. And in the other axis, I have the energy of the radiation in mega electron volt unit. And here we have a range of elements. And the relevance of this diagram for the biological materials is somewhere close to 20 for effective atomic number of the molecules of water. And we know that around 70% or 80% of any biological system consists of the water. So this is the line that is under interest for us. And if I look at the range of radiation using in medical schools, it is going to be within such a range where the Compton effect is dominant. So people under cancer treatment under radiation, the dominant scattering inside their body is Compton effect. Okay. Here I have a diagram, which is basically a flow chart or a hierarchy of radiation injury. If we look at this diagram, in this scale, I have time, starting from 1 second, then minutes and hours, days, and years. And if I look at the event within 1 second, I have ionizing radiation, which creates some of the products, such as free radicals. And these free radicals are the result of interaction of the radiation with water molecules. And we agree that 80% of our tissues and body consists of water molecules, so this is the dominant effect. And it happened in one second. Then I have a pathway to a DNA damage, which is happening within minutes or something. Then we have DNA mutation, and eventually we have the development of the cancer. So we have this is from the computational approach. This is a very challenging problem because we have to come if you are looking for a universal model to put everything together, then we have to make a computational platform to cover events from second to years. Okay, so this is a very challenging problem. We cannot handle this. So we are going to focus on some time domains What I'm going to tell you today is the events happening within 1 second. Actually, if I look at the time scale for the ionizing radiation interacting with water molecule and creation of free radicals, I realize that free radicals can be created within 1 femtosecond. 1 femtosecond means 10 to the minus 15 seconds. These free radicals have some have a lifetime because they can be recombined and they can be neutralized. There are different mechanisms to decay the free radicals. And the time scale, the measurement time scales for that is 1 nanosecond. So it creates in 1 femtosecond and then it annihilates in 1 nanosecond. You may say, okay, this is a very tiny, very small time, but if I look at the time difference between femtosecond and nanosecond, I realize that there is 6 order of magnitude difference. And within the 6 order of magnitude, there are many things happening, which nobody knows. So this is something that I can call it a rich uncharted territory that we can discover. And we can come with some strategies. If we understand what's going on in this time scale, we may come with some strategies and some plans to prevent injury, and we may able to modify the time scale for the cancer development maybe 2 times longer. Or something like that, which is going to be a breakthrough. All right, so what are these OH free radicals? As you know, this is a molecule, a diatomic molecule, consists of oxygen and hydrogen. It is charge neutral, so there is no charge associated to this. But there is one unpaired electron in this diatomic molecule. And this one unpaired electron has spin 1/2. So a free radical behaves like a tiny magnetic moment. It carries a magnetic moment. And what I'm going to show you later, we are one of the proposals coming out of this study is to use this magnetic moment and manipulate that magnetic moment in such a way that it cannot make a reaction with a DNA molecule. So because it is charge neutral, its motion governed by the thermal diffusion, Brownian motion, or random walk. This diagram shows the pathway in formation of free radicals. The radiation in form of alpha, beta, X, or gamma ionized water molecule, and then it produced OH radical or an H radical. And here is a table for the time scales, and this is a very important time scale for us because if we want to get rid of these free radicals one way or the other, we have this 1 nanosecond upper time scale to deal with that. So this 10 to the minus 9 second is an opportunity for us to prevent the damage induced by free radicals. Okay. The other important fact for the free radicals is the energy for their creation. In order to ionize water molecule and form a free radical, we need in the order of magnitude of 10 electron volts. So therefore, 100 electron volts of a photon or electron, any kind of radiation, can produce 6 free radicals. And if we calculate based on these numbers, we realize that 1 gray of radiation can produce a density of free radicals in the order of 10 to the 20. And this is four orders of magnitude smaller than the Avogadro number of ideal gas in standard pressure and standard temperature. All right. Is there any questions so far? Okay, so I move on. So the initial damage of a DNA occurs through different type of forms, such as single-strand break, double-strand break, or base damage. There are a great amount of experimental studies on this and statistics. It has been reported in the literature that 1 gray of radiation may cause around 1,000 base damage, 200 crosslinks, 1,000 single-strand break, and only 40 double-strand break. Okay, what is the difference? In single-strand break, one of the backbones is broken, but the other backbone is intact. So any enzymes which is going to take care of the repair of the damaged side can use the other backbone as a template to repair the damage. So they put some bases inside the DNA based on the other base, complementary base, of the intact DNA. So any single strand break is repairable by enzymes and by proteins. But in double strand break, both backbones are broken, the genetic information is gone, and there is a chance for the enzyme to make a mistake. And any mistake in repair mechanism leads to a genetic mutation, which may be suppressed by cell death, apoptosis, or it can lead to a development of cancer if suppressor genes are deleted. Yes? Right. Okay, I'm going to show you. So I'm going to show you movies and trying at the end convince you this is the case. That's a good question. Now, okay, so here we realize that there is a chance for the cancer, and we know that the cancer is characterized by uncontrolled cell division, abnormal growth of cells, and ability of cells to invade other tissues. And unfortunately, if cancer develops, it causes death. So so now, if we believe that radiation produces some damages, then this damage can be this information that the DNA has been damaged can be sent by some signals to proteins and enzymes which are in the nearby, and through the diffusion, these enzymes come and make a repair mechanism. This is the way that our DNA can be repaired all the time. There are many reasons in nature that the DNA can be damaged, and there is a smart mechanism established through the evolution that these enzymes can realize the damage and they can fix it. So many of these damages are fixed by such a pathway. There are very complex proteins and enzymes. I'm not going to talk about that, but this is so-called non-homologous end joining by enzymes. And for mathematician and computer scientists, this is something interesting because they can come up with some rate equations. Here we have, if we look at this pathway carefully, we have double-strand breaks in form of this type of DNA. We have enzymes. Then these enzymes come and make some complexes here in the middle, and then they fix the damage, and then enzyme goes away. This is the effect of enzymes. So there are, this is a chemical reaction associated with some chemical rates. And immediately we can, as a chemist or a biochemist, immediately you can write down a rate equation for this. And you can give this rate equation to, yes, please. Does damage to enzymes? Yes, of course it can, but that's not crucial. The crucial, so yes, everything can be damaged by radiation, but the crucial point in cancer development is change of information, and this is hidden in DNA sequence. So that's important, and it can be transfer to the next generation of cells in cell divisions and etc., and then the tumor cancer can develop. Those proteins, it doesn't matter. Because if protein is damaged, there is transcription, there is translation in cell, and they can be substituted. But DNA cannot. The damaged DNA is something which cannot be replaced by any other mechanisms. The only situation for the damaged cells is to make a suicide or be assassinated by other cells. That's all. So when we give this rate equations to computer, we can solve and calculate the density of the double-strand breaks, and we can plot it as a function of time, and then we can use this as a fitting model for the experimental data. There are lots of works on this direction. And now if I want to summarize at this point, then we have some computational platforms based on the Compton scattering and all microscopic scatterings, and we have some computational platforms in this scale where we are dealing with the coarse grain type of reaction diffusion models. Okay, what is missing? I'm trying to convince you what we found recently is can put this missing part. But before that, let me, because I know potentially there are some people from Department of Radiation Oncology, so let me show this and show the relevance of this work to the treatment plans. So here in the medical schools, we have modalities in the treatment of cancer. This is a standard procedure. If we go if we are suspicious of cancer, we go to the physician. Then the immediate thing that they do is to send the patient to for diagnostic, CT scan or PET scan. Then if there is a cancer tumor somewhere, then they do the surgery, and then the next stage is chemo or gene or hormone therapy, and the final stage is radiation therapy. So this person is under treatment in radiation. This gigantic thing is accelerator. It generates X-ray. The range of energy for this X-ray is between 6 or 18 mega electron volt. And then this X-ray goes from the top to the bottom. And if we track the X-ray inside the cell, here is the events. There are many scatterings going on, and eventually this X-ray decays to small energies. But the bad thing from X-ray is due to this diagram. This diagram shows the dose deposition of X-ray as a function of the distance. The maximum dose of X-ray starts somewhere close to the skin. So if I have a tumor somewhere in my lung, like 5 centimeters from my skin. Then a fraction of this X-ray goes to my tumor. The main part of the radiation absorbs in the top. So then what we are doing here is we want to kill bad cells, the cancerous cells, but it is there is no way to prevent X-ray from killing good cells. So good cells and bad cells kill with each other. So then we have to optimize the treatment plan to minimize the exposure of radiation to good cells and maximize the exposure to the bad cells. Okay, so here are the challenges. One of the things which can be outcome of radiation therapy is the secondary cancer. At the beginning, I told you that radiation is a source of cancer, but now this is a part of treatment of the cancer. So radiation can produce cancer and can destroy cancer, but the secondary effect or is other cancer may be developed in a few years late after that. Okay, so the other challenges here is understanding the geometry of the tumor. Sometimes we are not sure what is the geometry of the tumor because there are some normal organs somewhere close to it, and it is very difficult in the X-ray to see, to distinguish between good and bad cells. The other issue is the human anatomy, which is always under motion. It is very difficult for a patient to make it static without motion. And even if we make it static, we know that heart moves, we need to breathe. So sometimes, even if the plan is very accurate, if the delivery is not good, then there is a missing of a target and it causes problems. The other issue is sensitive organs such as the spinal cord and heart, and they have to be protected from from excessive radiation. Here in this accelerator, the gantry, there are some leaves. So the treatment plan is based on collimation of the X-ray. There are some leaves inside. They make they conform the geometry of the tumor in such a way the leaves can make a particular shape, and they can cover the organ at risk. And then we can shoot radiation and expose it with if this is a tumor, we can expose it with the X-ray, and we can prevent exposure of radiation from organ at risk. This method is so-called step-and-shoot method. This is a standard method using in the radiation therapy, but this is not ideal because if there is a motion, then this motion cannot be captured by such a treatment plan. The ideal thing is to come with an idea in which we can register the motion of a tumor and then give it to a system of leaves, and then these leaves can keep track of the motion, and like a chasing bad guys, we can deliver radiation in a very efficient way and in very accurate way. But there are some technical issues in which how we can make such a control system between the human body and the radiation system. Okay, now let me go back to the problem of a DNA damage and free radicals to answer your question. But before going that far, let me remind ourselves about the structure of a DNA. The DNA is a double helix structure. We have a backbone here, consists of a periodic structure of the phosphate, oxygen, carbons, and from the other side, the same, and the genetic information is stored in the middle in form of base pairs. This part of the DNA is disconnected physically from the other parts of the DNA, and there are hydrogen bonds in between which make the stability of this structure. And there is also interaction between each of these bases along the chain, and that's the stacking interaction. And so if we account for the hydrogen bonds and the stacking, this is the stable structure in form of double helix for the DNA. Okay, now free radicals. Here I'm showing you a movie. Oops, I went to. Here I'm going to show you a movie of a DNA structure and using a reactive force field to simulate the damage. Here in this, within this structure has been downloaded from protein database, so it is a model for a realistic DNA. And I put some free radicals. If you look at this, these things here, they are free radicals. The colors in this here, the gold representing phosphorus, red is oxygen, white is hydrogen, these are carbons, this like a grain, and the blue is nitrogen. So here I have a backbone. Here I have a backbone. Inside I have a base pair. Then I put some free radicals close to this DNA molecule. And this is an event right after free radical production. I divide this structure into two parts. The upper part is not close to any free radical. The lower part is close. I put this intentionally because I want to show the stability of the computational platform for that. The computational approach here is reactive force field. Why reactive? Because free radicals make a chemical reaction. So the damage is due to the chemical reactions. So any computational platform that we want to use has to be tuned for breaking bonds and forming bonds. We cannot use force fields from some other computational force fields such as AMBER or CHARM or GROMAX because they are good for something like protein folding, not for chemical reaction. Okay, so now I'm going to show you how free radicals can make a damage to break a bond here in this part of DNA, which is a single strand break. So this dotted line shows the broken bonds, and I have, if you look at this free radical, this free radical, this is the second free radical. I'm going to show you the slow motion of this movie one more time. But this is the second free radical, and we see that this free radical is going to be falling apart. The hydrogen went to the thymine, which is one of the bases, and oxygen went to this, and we see a big gap here opening, and this is a stable structure after the damage, and we simulated the single strand break in this scale of the DNA for the first time, and we published this in Journal of Physical Chemistry in September. So before publication of this paper, I want to emphasize that there was no such computational work based on a realistic DNA structure. And everything that I simulated here is within like order of 10 picoseconds. Well, it depends. It depends where these free radicals are. So if it is angstrom, then it is like 100 of femtosecond. And depends on the environment. I'm going to show you if I fill, so the simulation carried out in vacuum. If I fill this with water molecules, then the diffusion length is going to be longer. And there are these issues nobody knows. So people know some qualitative behavior. People know it from the experiment. So when we published this paper, we had to deal with the experimentalists. They had some disagreement. And this disagreement tells me that there are some unsettled issues. So who knows? Maybe experimentalists made a wrong model to come with some prediction. And now this is a time for refinement of the experiment. So we can go back and look at this literature, which is stored like for 50 years after Second World War II, and see what is the best fit. Yes. Yes, the free radicals. in this simulation, I just put it by hand. I put it by hand. Well, they are random. I use a random generator to put a location. They are totally random. I put it in some clusters, and I use a random generator to make a random location. But I didn't want to have a free radicals in the upper part because I wanted to see, I wanted to see the stability of the structure. Sometimes, if you use computational platforms, you may come with some results, but you don't know if they are true or not. So this is one way of checking. Okay, so here is the slow motion of the same thing that I showed you. In this first movie, we see the damage from the first free radical. Unfortunately, I think this is a small, maybe you can see it very well, but there was an initial damage which made this initial separation. But this initial separation can be repaired because the distance is not too much, and it could this phosphate could go get close to the backbone and make a bond. But we have other free radical here, and this free radical I'm going to show you in the second movie does the second damage, and then this free radical, if you see the motion, is coming close, and so it formed a bond with the phosphate, the phosphorus, and then other bond with the base, and then this is going down, this going up, and as a result of this, a hydrogen bond between the base pairs is broken. The stacking interaction between the DNA bases along the chain is broken. So this is damage to a backbone and damage to a base. Here is, again, the same movie, but let me skip that. Maybe we are... So when you generate a movie like that, you need to make some analysis. And through that analysis, I found this chemical pathway. I have two free radicals. Let me make it larger. I have two free radicals. The first free radical is going to disintegrate it into oxygen and hydrogen. Oxygen goes to carbon, hydrogen goes to this oxygen, and the hydrogen in thymine goes to that oxygen. So this is something, three reaction happening in a very small time scale, within femtosecond time scale. As a result of that, I have such phosphate bounded to two oxygen. I have this, so this connection, this bond, this covalent bond is broken. Instead, the dangling bond of the oxygen is going to be neutralized by the hydrogen, this hydrogen coming from the thymine. And also, this covalent bond between oxygen and phosphorus is broken, and the dangling bond, again, is neutralized by the hydrogen, passivated by hydrogen. Then the second free radical comes, and it falls apart. The oxygen goes to the phosphate. It produces this phosphorus with three bonds with oxygen. And then this hydrogen goes to passivate the dangling bond of this oxygen. So we observe that throughout this pathway, we have the broken bonds in the backbone, and we have some chemical modification of the base. So base damage and backbone damage happen at the same time. One of our experimentalists, one of our reviewers in our papers, was one of the well-known people, and they published many review articles. And what they told me during the referee process was, from their experimental data, there is no base damage. The damage starts from the backbone. Now we see that the backbone damage and the base damage happen at the same time. There is a disagreement between people who are working in radiochemistry departments and people who are working in the radiobiological departments, biologists and chemists. Chemists say that the damage starts from the backbone. Radiobiologists say that we have more base damage than backbone damage. So here is a point that we can negotiate with both sides to reconcile a unified picture for the DNA damage. Here I'm showing you a quantum mechanical computational approach. Yes. Right. Yes. 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 I just keep track of. I made a lot of the slides. I keep track of each individual atom, which one goes to where. That's all I did. My background is physics. I'm not a chemist. I cannot make a guess. I'm not smart, so I have to look to see what's going on. Yeah. That's it. Okay. Okay. So the previous video that I showed you was based on React's force field. The React's force field is a fitting from ab initio calculation or DFT calculation. And it was designed for nanostructures, not for the DNA. So I had a project in Dallas working on graphene, and I was using this React force field, and I told myself, okay, if it works for graphene and nanostructures, why not the DNA? I talk to the developer. Then we agreed to share information. He sent me some files. I compiled those files in my computer, and I came with this picture that I showed you. So it was not tested before. So we need to double check as much as possible. One of the checking that I did was checking against the quantum mechanics, which is a DFT calculation using CPMD. But I don't know if you're familiar with this quantum mechanical computational approaches. They are limited to a very tiny fragment of any biomolecule. So this is the best we can do it. And the movie that I'm going to show you is a production of 3 days CPMD run in my computer. This is a powerful computer. So this is one of the events. This free radical, which was close to the sugar ring, this blue dot is representing the amino acid. Then this free radical, which is here, breaks the bond, breaks the ring, and as a result of that, if I put it in a larger scale, this broken ring can fall apart into different things, and then it can produce the backbone damage. And here is another movie from quantum mechanics. This free radical, this amino group is going to be separated, is going to be kicked out by the free radical, and the free radical is going to replace. So this is a free radical somewhere close. And then the conduction, the covalent connection between the base and the backbone is broken, and this double bond oxygen is going to be replaced. Okay, so. And a few words about this quantum mechanical approach, since we are talking to math audience. The way that in quantum mechanics we can do the molecular dynamics simulation is to calculate the energy configurations of the electrons using the Schrodinger equation, and then this energy produces some forces to this element, and due to these forces, these elements are moving, and as they move, the electronic configuration is going to change. So there is a loop between the motion of the nuclei and the configuration of the electrons, and that's the reason it takes 3 days for such a small molecule to be simulated. The previous one was simulated much shorter than this, and that's the advantage of that force field. Okay, now how about the base damage? This is the same movie, but I focus on the bases. And let's see what's going to happen to these bases. We observe that this base, which is adenine, is going to be a large ring. And I can compare it with this, which is far away from free radicals. So we observe a direct evidence of base damage. And of course, there are some abstraction of the hydrogen, some water molecules forms, and etc. Here is one of the free radicals, another free radical. We can find free radicals in some small clusters here. And here I'm going to show you the double strand break, which happening here for this phosphate in one backbone and in other phosphorus in the other in a complementary backbone. And the broken bonds are shown by the dotted points. So we see many things happening. This is a water molecule. This is the broken bond. And And this water molecule is a product of hydrogen abstraction. And now the second phosphorus is disconnected. Here we see this carbon and oxygen is separated. And we have a totally distorted structure of a DNA. Broken from this side, broken from this side, and this is a simulation for double strand break. We see formation of another water molecule. And the other thing is, if you look at the upper part, we see the stability of this structure. So whatever we are simulating here is due to the free radical. Okay, now how I can manipulate or control the interaction between free radicals and the DNA. As I said at the very beginning, a free radical carries a magnetic moment, and we can use this magnetic moment to build an energy barrier between the DNA and free radical. And if we can come with a way to magnetize the DNA by sending a photon or something like that, or a combination of the chemical or optical means, then if I can make a neutral magnetic state of the DNA into a triplet state, which is shown by these arrows, then I can build up a magnetic shield between free radical and the DNA. And like two magnets, they repel each other. So first I did some calculation, and I calculated the energy barrier. That energy barrier was like 10,000 Kelvin, in unit of Kelvin. And we know that the DNA lives in room temperature. So 10,000 Kelvin is much higher than the room temperature. So what happened is there is a significant energy barrier. All right, let's examine using quantum mechanical simulation. Here I am simulating a DNA, a base damage here. I have a free radical, and this base is neutralized. This is a normal base without any optical manipulation of the spin, so I would expect to see hydrogen abstraction. Okay, so if I do the simulation, here you go. I had a free radical, there is a hydrogen abstraction, there is a damaged DNA, a radical DNA, and water molecule. Now let me change the spin state of a base, of a guanine. Then if I do that, then we see this. This free radical is here. It tried to make a reaction, it cannot. There is a magnetic shield, so it cannot get close. So still, so what's going on? We send the radiation, we produce free radicals, but these free radicals are not able to diffuse. So we make a break here, a magnetic break. Well, something like that. It is possible, yes. Every molecule can undergo spin singlet triplet transition by optical pumping. Yes. Your next question would be, okay, if I have a tumor inside my body, then how I can send a light such as blue, because our body is dark against blue. Well, my suggestion is, well, maybe we cannot use that, although we can send a fiber optic like a catheter, which in the breast cancer, they use a catheter to send the radiation. And we can send a fiber optics, or it can be used for superficial cancers, such as a skin cancer or other type of cancers. Okay, so let me examine the same thing for the backbone. So this molecule here, representing a backbone, here in the top, I have a normal backbone without any optical pumping. What I'm going to see is the hydrogen abstraction and the damaged backbone. So here is the damage. Now, how about if I change the spin multiplicity of the DNA? We see that we cannot get a chemical reaction. And, yes.
So you talked about all these different interactions and the backbone. So is it just as soon as it's exposed to the DNA, it's got the interaction?
Depends. I'm not saying that all free radicals can be stopped this way, but even half of them stopped, I have a half of damage. It's a radiation. As soon as you send the radiation, in 1 femtosecond, free radicals are generated. Yeah, I put it by hand. But this is 1 femtosecond after exposure of radiation. Yes, and there is a lifetime for free radicals. And that lifetime is 1 nanosecond. So I only need 1 nanosecond to make a control. Then these free radicals are going to absorb by environment. Okay, how much time do I have? Am I running out of time? Yeah, okay. So here, just let me show us, this is the environment. I have water molecules, and what we observe, the reaction gets longer time to happen because of the network of water molecules. Here is that network of hydrogen bonds. Here is the network. These dotted points are the hydrogen bonds. So we see that this free radical is captured by this water molecules, and there is a repulsion. There is some forces which pull back the free radicals, and so it is very crucial to study the environment. After all, these free radicals are created in the environment. So let me finish with this open questions, or what we can do next. What we can do, I put 3 things here. Modeling realistic DNA environment in vivo. How DNA in water resembles DNA in cell. I told you there is a discrepancy between radiobiologists and radiochemists. Chemists usually put the DNA in the water solution, and they think that, okay, this water is a good model of the water in cell. Who knows? The cell, the water in the cell has a different character, the water in just in a glass of water. So this is something that we can study. This is what I said. The other question is making a molecular simulation for repair mechanism. So here I just showed you the damage, no repair mechanisms. We can come with some smart idea to make a repair. Yes, please.
Is there a difference in the repair mechanism of a normal cell and a cancer cell?
As far as I know, there are some particular enzymes such as Ku70 or gamma H2X, some particular enzymes which coming and make a repair. I'm not aware of normal cells. And what the difference? So I cannot answer that question. But I know some particular enzymes are for this particular damage. Okay. The last thing that we can do is combination of the Monte Carlo simulation with the molecular dynamics that I showed you to come with a realistic model for radiobiological effects. To see, to make a model for X-ray, for alpha, and with a different distribution of the free radicals and some stochastic modeling. And I think that's it for my talk. Thank you.
Any questions?
Does the radiation leave the DNA molecule itself intact, or does it affect it?
Radiation itself? 80% of damage coming from free radicals, because 80% of cell consists of water. So the radiation interact with water, and then the damaged water or ionized water make it damage to the DNA.
Can you imagine that the DNA receiving, the radiation receiving DNA is not...
It is. That's a 20%. Yes. There are some direct mechanisms which make a break, but that's a 20%. Yes. Yeah, it is important. But the point is, if we can come with a strategy to delay cancer from 1 year to 2 years, I'm pretty sure this is a breakthrough. I'm not saying that this is a cure for cancer, but... I didn't test it for polymers. But I'm pretty sure there are lots of literature on this.
Secondly, you finished off by saying that the environment is very important.
Right.
Water. But we know that DNA inside the nucleus is a 2 year old molecule.
Right. Yes. That's very important, yes.
It's very tight impact.
Yes. Yes. Well, if you open the book, the textbooks, that tells you that 80% of the damage is from free radicals. And those textbooks is based on research in vivo, as well as in vitro. So perhaps, I'm not expert on this, but perhaps there are some experimental data to support that. Which... Yes, I did some experiments. One of the experiments that I did was putting some nucleotides in water, this graph. So we put the nucleotides in a chamber full of water, just solution. We made a solution, a digest solution of the nucleotides. What's that? No, it wasn't polymer. It was a nucleotide. No, I don't think so. But I cannot trust my knowledge in chemistry to give a definite answer. But what we did, we made a solution, the digest solution of nucleotide guanine, and we put it in the water inside the chamber in the front of a cesium radioactive material. We closed the chamber, radiation came. Next morning, we opened the door and we made a photoabsorption. This two peaks that you see from the photoabsorption of nucleotide before ionizing radiation, and the next one was after radiation, and that's a measure of how the damage can change the chemical characters of the nucleotide. Well, we had a plan to send a photon to this, but unfortunately my colleague who helped me to understand this passed away because of the cancer. He was one of a very good radiobiologist, and we wrote a proposal, but we were not able to accomplish. We just submitted this paper. His name is in this paper, but that's all we did. No, but we can try. It was You know, what we published in September was the first was the first paper on this context. We can publish, I'm pretty sure. One of my colleagues told me, okay, so you publish this paper, you can publish 100 more in 1 year. I said, yes, we can do it. Yes, no, but we can try. We are. I'm looking forward to talk to experts to get some feedback to see what is important, what is not. And for me, it is as a modeler of this, it is just a matter of 1 hour change. I can go and change oxygen with hydrogen. This is everything is now automatized, and I can do it. And next morning, I can come with some results. So everything can be done very quickly and very efficiently.
Just curious, there is any relationship between adsorbed dose against the number of OH radicals against the number of DSPs or single strand breaks?
Well, we can answer this question from I showed you a diagram. First of all, if we believe that every free radical every hit of radiation produce free radical. This is a questionable. This is under debate because 90% of radiation goes without any single hit. But if there is one hit, because one X-ray radiation is mega electron volt, then formation of a free radical is 10 electron volt. You can imagine how many free radicals can be produced. So this is based on the stochastic modeling. We can go to some of this Monte Carlo modeling and model this. And this is one of the things that should be done. I talked to people who developed this program, such as MCMPX. They cannot answer because it was not relevant a question when they generated such program. But now we have a tool, and maybe we can come with some Monte Carlo modeling and to study this thing. So this is, I cannot give the answer because I haven't done it. And I don't think if anyone knows for sure. But there are some statistics on this. I showed you one of these things here. If you can see it, I'm not sure if you can see it, but it says that 1 gray of radiation produces 1,000 base damage, 200 cross links, 1,000 single strand break, and 40 double strand break. This is based on. This is experimental. Yes, this is. People, yes, there are some people who modeled DNA as a rigid body, and then they send radiation and they did some Monte Carlo sampling. It was just, okay, I use a random generator, and where is the damage? I can cover an area and I can pick some voxels or pixels randomly, and there is a damage, there is no damage, or something like that. And there are some verifications, yes, Monte Carlo verification. But for that, you need to know the cross sections of the interaction. And these cross sections are in this programs in Los Alamos, and what you have to dig up.
Okay, so maybe we'll thank Ramin again, and there should be cooking and coffee out there.
Thank you.